Makeshift Stories presents Somewhere, Sometime, an irregular series of short sci-fi and fantasy stories.
Part of the way through writing this month's episode, our family dog who has been with us for the last 14 years, and you have never heard barking due to laborious editing, suddenly died. She was a self-appointed alpha of the house, barking at us, people on the street, squirrels, cats, rabbits, birds, falling leaves. Well, hopefully you get the picture. She inspired a story idea a few years back, which has sat on the shelf until now. So as a tribute to our faithful canine friend, Annie, I stopped writing and delayed the show to develop that story and present it to you this month. Loyalty, according to Wikipedia, is faithfulness or devotion to a person, country, group, or cause. In this month's story, loyalty comes in many flavors as an aging pack of genetically modified, spacefaring canines embark on what they hope to be their last mission. We now invite you to sit back and relax as you listen to Makeshift Story 75, Canis Major. Somewhere in some time, it might appear that loyalty is a rare commodity, when in fact, everyone is dutifully following in its path. A sleek bone-white ship suddenly emerged back into real space-time, then drifted through the cold nothingness. The icy light of Sirius, the dog star, turned the sunward side of the tiny ship into a blinding, cool white beacon. The spacecraft jerkily pitched about, allowing its sensors to sweep the area. It appeared to freeze and listen for a moment, then swung around in the direction it had come. Suddenly, a pulse of unseen particles leapt from one of its instrument packages, and in response, a much larger ship cautiously emerged from the sub-ether and repeated the same silent dance before settling down. Unnoticed to both, a third craft, whose surface was so dark that it was only visible as a shadow sliding by in front of the stars, emerged and moved off into the darkness. Diamond quickly scanned the results of the scout's sweep on her console.
"Just barely detectable, but we have a trace match. It's here," she snipped.
They had been searching for that specific particle pattern through the sub-ether, occasionally picking up its tantalizing scent for weeks, and it had finally led them here. So close to where they had started, Diamond mused, that it was almost funny. Sirius B, their home, was only 3 light weeks away. She impatiently barked to recall the scout, Stella, the old comm officer laid her ears back as she obediently mouthed the necessary commands into the control bit, with a delicate precision that could only be gained through a lifetime of service.
"Young Max has acknowledged the command and is returning,"
Stella began to relay.
"He's saying that next time, let one of the hounds take point. They're always marking the scout ship as theirs anyway, and he doesn't like the scent they've left in the cabin."
Choosing to ignore the scout's cheeky response, Diamond swung around to face the rest of the pack. It was better not to react to the small things. It showed that you were in control, Diamond reminded herself. But the disrespectful tone in the message was getting all too common among the younger pack members, and it made her want to bare her teeth. Even her beta, Chico, had been getting bold of late. It was one of the drawbacks of working with a mixed crew, she supposed. Each line had its own eccentricities, and all desired to have their own as alpha. But it was also their strength, and why they had become the best salvage ship for hire in Canis Major. But Diamond suddenly felt very old. She was still alpha of the Argos, and no one had yet dared to challenge her. But she knew that wouldn't last forever.
"Finally,"
Diamond announced in a sarcastic yelp.
"And how many false scent trails have we followed to bring us here?"
Everyone on the bridge nervously kept their noses glued to their displays. When no one answered, Diamond loudly barked.
"Okay then, let's find and retrieve the target so we can go home and get paid. I'll be in my stateroom. Beta Chico, you're in charge."
Chico, a pug, which despite his diminutive size, had bossed his way up through the ranks, lifted one ear in acknowledgement of the order. To everyone in the pack, it was obvious that he was impatiently biding his time until Diamond let go of the reins. He had barely waited until the hatch had closed before he defiantly took the old alpha's seat.
which no one was allowed to sit in. Chico smugly looked around the bridge, daring someone to challenge him, then barked for everyone to get back to work. Diamond ambled down the corridor lamenting. She was forced to take breaks now. There was a time when she wouldn't have left the bridge at all during a job, but her arthritis kept acting up, sending gnawing pains through her joints if she sat in one place too long. Not wanting the pack, especially the pug, to see her struggle, Diamond routinely had to retire to her cabin to take the drugs that she had secretly obtained from one of her human contacts. Part of her mind had insisted that the pills were just another Terran deception. They smelt and tasted awful, so at first she refused to take them. After all, no rational Knissian would entirely trust a two-legged mammal. It had been a stunning revelation that shook Knissian society to its bone when the first human spacecraft had been discovered lurking around a neighboring star system. In an outburst of guilt, the Terrans had immediately blurted out the truth about Alpha Canis Majoris V, which over time the Knissian had shortened to Canis. It had been one of many of humanity's less than noble moments. Alpha Canis Majoris V had been an experimental colony gone wrong and was abandoned when its economy collapsed, except for the genetically modified workforce, which was deemed too costly to remove. Engineered from domestic Terran dogs to be incredibly intelligent and completely loyal, the Knissians had been left to fend for themselves. So the first humans to contact them in generations were not entirely surprised to find that Canis had thrived, but were embarrassed by their participation in its history. And to their dismay, the Knissians discovered that tens of thousands of years of domestication and the more recent genetic tinkering made the humans irresistible. But behind their backs, all Knissians growled their mistrust. Diamond pawed the medicine dispenser open and reluctantly ate the chalky tablets the device had spit out. She sucked water from a spigot to wash the distasteful things down, then moved over to her terminal, barked it on, and began to review the contract details as she waited for the arthritis drugs to kick in. Their job had been to find and salvage a particular piece of tech, an ancient experiment that had been supposedly hidden to protect its secrets until the universe was mature enough to use it. The story predated the Canis colony experiment, so when a group of humans had approached Diamond to find and retrieve a myth, she had initially laughed, dismissing them by saying they needed treasure hunters, not salvage experts. But when they revealed their evidence, showed her the very particular quantum pattern the device still leaked, and told her the extremely generous terms, 10% of all future profits, she reluctantly accepted. The risk was large, but if they were successful, those in her pack who chose to would be able to retire. Diamond was distracted by a scratching at her hatch.
"Come,"
she growled, and the hatch obediently slid open, revealing Tor, a laid-back golden collie cross, whom Diamond had all but adopted when he first came aboard as a yearling. Tor had been a bit of an omega, and still exhibited the annoying enthusiasm of a pup. With a submissive grin on his face, Tor hesitantly entered and took up station in a corner. Trying not to give away any clues to her state of mind, Diamond watched Tor until his eyes darted down and away. She had taught him well, Diamond told herself. He still showed the respect an alpha deserved, even an old one like her. Tor waited until the hatch slid shut.
"The grumbling is growing."
He cautiously opened, noting how Diamond's hackles were beginning to rise.
"That pug has a sizable number of the younger crew thinking that you're too old to lead. The older members of the crew are behind you, but you need to keep your reliance on those a secret."
Tor nodded at the medicine dispenser.
"Get the med-aid to give you a longer dose so you don't have to come back here during a watch. Maybe you should start sleeping on the bridge again, too."
"I know, Tor. I can smell pug in the command chair every time I go back to the bridge."
Tor looked critically at Diamond for a moment, then averted his eyes.
"My muzzle is white. It's hard to know how old I am. And anyway, no one pays attention to me. But yours used to be black. You might want to gradually dye it to cover the gray. Oh, and it'd be a good idea to put Chico in his place any time you can.
Diamond nodded and smiled, noting the scar on Tor's muzzle. She'd bitten down too hard on his nose once, when she'd been forced to discipline him soon after he had joined the crew. He'd been submissive ever since, and Diamond knew she needed to do the same with the pug next time there was a chance.
Go, I need to rest before I go back.
Tor immediately turned to leave.
Thank you,
she said to his haunches as Tor left. But Diamond wasn't sure he had heard, and made a note to let Tor know how much she depended on him.
Alpha to the bridge,
Chico suddenly howled through the intercom system, adding,
Now!
That pug is close to crossing over the line.
Diamond snarled as she tried to stretch her stiff joints, then reluctantly left her cabin. When she arrived at the bridge, the hatch recognized her scent and silently slid open. On an impulse, Diamond jumped through so fast that she caught Chico in the act of leaping from her chair.
Ha! Caught you!
She angrily gnarled at the upstart pug, then bared her teeth. Diamond was about to chase him back to his station when one of the retrievers interrupted her.
Alpha, we've got company.
Diamond calmed herself down, then casually took her command chair, curling up her nose at the lingering smell.
Have they spotted us?
She'd half expected this. The humans were bad at keeping secrets, so Diamond had anticipated that there would end up being several rival groups sent to salvage the same object.
No, ma'am. They're in a standard search pattern. Stealth mode.
She abruptly barked, making everyone jump. The lights on the bridge dimmed and the hum of machines dwindled to nothing.
Give us an exterior view.
The walls on three sides of the bridge appeared to turn transparent, and the pack watched in anxious silence as the frantic back-and-forth movement of a distant ship in tracking mode became apparent against the starry background.
Overlay particle detection,
Diamond snapped. An ephemeral contrail appeared on the screen, stretching away from the Argos back toward the place where they had entered normal space. They watched with bated breath as the new ship dodged about, close to but never quite touching the trail of disturbed particles they had left in their wake. As the minutes stretched out, the odd whimper of tension and anticipation could be heard. Then the craft, as if finding something, suddenly turned and charged past, so close that Diamond imagined she could feel its particle wake disturb her fur. Chaos immediately broke out on the bridge as everyone stopped what they were doing and barked their indignation at the passing ship. However impossible, their nemesis seemed to momentarily slow as if saying, I know you're there. It dropped a sensor buoy, then sped on.
Enough. Back to work,
Diamond growled.
Who is it?
One of the retrievers mouthed several controls, then looked at her display.
Purebreds. Border Collie clan markings,
she snarled in disgust.
Launch her decoy,
Diamond immediately commanded. A lab on the far side of the bridge obediently pawed in the command. The Argos seemed to jerk in response. Then on the screen, a dark object streaked away. After it had reached a safe distance, the decoy began to spew excited particles, and a holographic replica of the Argos flashed into existence and sped away on an erratic weaving course, the new ship in hot pursuit. Ruffs relaxed and ears came back up as the tension on the bridge dissipated.
That's the problem with purebred clans. They're too single-minded. They'll chase the decoy until it runs out of fuel, and by then, we'll be finished here.
Chico yelped in a self-satisfied tone, then barked commands, and machines began to hum, spinning up as the ship came back to life.
No!
Diamond quickly snapped.
Use that little head of yours to think for once, Chico. Their human clients will have sent at least one other pack, and they'll be coming right behind. We need to run silent.
Chico growled, motioning for the bridge crew to power down again, then puffed himself up and turned defiantly to face the old Alpha.
And how are we going to find the target without active sensors? You run and hide at the first scent of trouble.
Chico's eyes lasered into Diamond's, daring her. Chico turned his head, but kept his eyes locked on Diamond, so everyone on the bridge could see his confident sneer. Diamond checked her instinct to immediately attack the insolent Beta. She knew she was too slow now to win in the direct physical challenge, so with great effort, she kept her ears up and teeth covered. The minutes crawled by until Diamond sensed that the pug thought he was going to win. Then, intentionally, she dropped her eyes, breaking contact. Chico laughed in delight and turned away.
See? Diamond looked down. The old alpha has gun.
He didn't have time to finish his sentence before Diamond was on him, rolling the upstart over on his back. Then, lacking the nose to bite down on, she grabbed Chico's entire head in her mouth and bit just hard enough to leave an indentation in the folds on his face. Chico let out a whimper, which caused sporadic nervous laughter to break out around the bridge. Having made her point, Diamond let him go. He twisted back onto his feet and growled,
"That's the last time, old girl. This ship will be mine sooner than you think."
Diamond waited until Chico had angrily gone back to his station, then turned and reclaimed the Alpha's chair. There had been a time when she would have taken great pleasure in putting an upstart like Chico in his place, but not now. It was just something that had to be done, like dirty laundry. She looked around the bridge, noting how many others were her age or older. Despite the newer pack members, most of the crew had grained muzzles. When had they all aged so much, she wondered. They were too old to be out here.
"Make this the last job they need to do,"
she silently encouraged herself, then turned her attention to the job at hand.
"Use the passive sensors to locate the pattern. It'll take a bit longer, but there's only one gas giant and the star itself, so it shouldn't be that hard,"
Diamond barked. Chico was off duty, and Diamond had taken advantage of it to discreetly slip away to her stateroom to take her meds. She was almost back on the bridge when the scent of excitement and apprehension flooded the corridor. It was a silent, all-stations alarm. She increased her speed, making her aching joints complain. When she arrived on the bridge, all noses were trained on the status screens. Otto, the senior on the second shift, an aging but loyal healer, nervously acknowledged her arrival, nodding at the main display. The bridge reeked of regression, and the simulated smell of shepherds pumped into the air by the sensors. Everyone was growling. Diamond calmly settled into her chair, then confirmed the scent on the main screen. A large predator ship, with shepherd clan markings, was nosing about space where it had jumped in. After what seemed like an hour, but was in fact only a few moments, the lumbering thing lost interest and lazily swung around to move off. Letting in a breath that Diamond hadn't realized she was holding, the old alpha immediately barked.
"Have you finally found the target?"
Otto nodded to the main screen, where a small red dot had been placed almost on top of Sirius.
"It's in the star's corona. We just found it when the predator arrived."
"Give me a vector on that ship,"
Diamond anxiously snapped. Otto mouthed a control bit, and an arching line appeared, moving away from the Argos toward the star.
"Come on, you just can't let them go there,"
an all-too-familiar voice growled from behind.
"Show them we'll stand our ground. If you won't, I will."
"Chico, quiet,"
Diamond snapped.
"You've got to learn that not everything can be solved by brute force. We're a salvage operation. They're a clan predator ship. They'd walk all over us. Sometimes, it's better to think like a fox than a hound. Listen, this is what we're going to do."
The scout ship dropped into space, all its systems dead. Its parent, the Argos, slowly powered up, then sped away toward the gas giant orbiting far from Sirius. They waited in the cramped cabin until they were sure that the clan ship had altered course to take chase. The Argos was fast and could lose the slower predator any time it wanted, but for now it would play the role of the rabbit. The pilot brought the tiny scout back to life and turned it toward the star, but as he engaged its thrusters, Tor was pushed back into the comm station by a burst of acceleration, and a brief signal shot out before the pilot could reach over and mouth off the transmitter. He immediately shut everything down again. Then anxious minutes passed as they waited for a sign that the clan ship had noticed. Finally, Diamond broke the silence.
They haven't changed course. We were lucky. Tor, be careful next time. Now, let's go.
The orbit of the artifact was so close to Sirius that they literally had to surf along the star's rippling corona. As they drew closer, the alien machine's true scale became apparent. It was the size of a dozen Predator ships and dwarfed the Scout. The pilot made a slow approach, looking for a place to dock.
Look at all the pitting and scorch marks,
Chico noted as he pushed everyone aside to see out the front screen.
It must have been here for thousands of years. There,
he commanded.
It's over there, a landing platform.
The pilot had already spotted the cave-like area that extended back into a dark void and was carefully maneuvering toward it.
We'll need suits to get inside,
he dryly noted. There hadn't been time to slip back to her stateroom before they left the Argos, and now Diamond wished she had taken Tor's advice to up her dosage in the mornings. The medicine's effect had run out just after they had launched, causing her joints to stiffen and making them painful to bend, so getting into the pressure suit was a slow and agonizing process. She hoped that no one had noticed, but had seen Chico discreetly watching her reflection in the cockpit's main screen. Their eyes had met until Chico blinked and turned away. She had stared him down this time, but knew he would eventually win. After all, it was the natural way of things, and she had done the same to her old Alpha when she was young. Without too much difficulty, they managed to locate and open something like an airlock. Surprisingly, they had found a breathable atmosphere on the other side. But the moment Diamond sniffed it, she knew that something wasn't right. However, no one else in the small pack seemed to notice. Sensing her apprehension, Chico rudely pushed by Diamond to take point.
Particle detector,
he demanded, and one of the poodle techs approached and mouthed the controls on Chico's backpack.
I've got a good track,
he hissed. Diamond was about to put Chico in his place, then reconsidered. She sniffed the air again, and something in the back of her mind told her that it was time to take her own advice and be the fox. The pack headed off with Chico in the lead and Diamond lingering behind, like an alpha forced to become the omega. They trotted through corridors fueled by the growing scent of their target. Diamond intentionally trailed behind, feigning for once to blame her arthritis when Tor had dropped back to talk to her.
You're all too focused on the goal,
Diamond complained, and when he left, barked after his receding tail.
It's blinding you from the other signs. Tor, you should know better.
By the time they arrived in front of an impressive locked hatch, the fur on Diamond's back was rigid with anxiety. Chico had Tor give a cursory sniff at several spots in the corridor walls and doorframe.
Just dust, he pronounced. It's either been a very long time, or the area was cleverly wiped.
Chico barked for the techs to open the door. The two poodles cautiously approached. One put her ear to the wall, then growled commands to the male, who mouthed the controls of a portable robot which began to dismantle the locking mechanism. Seconds later, the door clicked open, and Chico boldly rushed in, the others following him in thoughtless obedience. Diamond waited until they were all inside, then carefully sniffed around the doorframe to confirm the faint scent she had picked up when they had first entered the ancient structure. She didn't understand how Tor could have missed it, but then an odd idea occurred to her, and Diamond bared her teeth in a feral smile. Maybe he hadn't.
Lights on,
she heard Chico demand in the distance. Diamond cautiously went through the opening, then moved unnoticed along the back wall. The room was dark and cold, punctuated by the chaotic beams of headlamps that picked up dust stirred up by their presence. Here and there the lights momentarily illuminated bits of equipment that lined the walls and covered a large table in the center of the room. Diamond knew the lamps were a stupid idea. Their glare blinded one's night vision, so you could only see a small point in front of you, leaving you vulnerable in all other directions. She turned away and looked into the dark, trying to avoid the beams. In the glaring cones of light, no one else had noticed what may have been status lights barely glowing in the dark. Diamond instinctively froze, listened, sniffed, and considered. There was power in air where there shouldn't have been, and now there was an all-too-familiar scent.
Two-legged snakes!
Diamond barked a warning, but just as she had finished, a figure stepped into the room behind the pack, blocking their exit. Without looking, Diamond already knew what it was. The creature touched something on the wall, which caused panels in the ceiling to light up, casting a sickly yellow glow through the room, then stepped forward, causing the pack to instinctively shift into a defensive formation. All bared their teeth and growled boisterous warnings, except one. Instead, Tor greeted the human with a friendly wag. Diamond silently shrank back into the shadow of an alien machine as Tor stepped up to greet the man. Stunned by Tor's betrayal, the pack watched in confusion as the two quickly moved over to the table in the center of the room. The man touched several controls, causing the machines to suddenly spring to life.
That's the one, Tor.
The tall human pointed to a 2-meter-wide toroid mounted to a wall. The thing hummed and crackled with unseen energy.
If the ancient texts are right, it's a wormhole generator, a portal to anywhere we'd ever want to go. The most valuable piece of salvage in history.
At that moment, Chico puffed himself up and started to move toward the man. A confident, aggressive Tor, one which Diamond had never seen before, moved to position himself between the human and Chico. The man turned and smiled.
Good boy, Tor, but maybe it's time to call in our friends.
He produced a communicator from a pocket, but before the two-leg could raise it, Diamond jumped out and knocked it away. Tor moved again, putting himself between Diamond and the man.
Tor has his own. The man smugly laughed. But it doesn't matter anyway. My people will come for us if we don't signal them in about 40 minutes. Thanks for finding this magnificent machine. If you help remove it, I might even be able to throw you and your crew a few bones for your trouble.
Chico moved to attack.
Wait!
Diamond barked, then turned to coldly stare at Tor.
Why?
Tor hesitated, looked up at the human, then back to the old alpha.
I'm not that much younger than you, Diamond. I've been in the protection of your shadow for most of my life. If I'm ever going to step out and make something of myself, it has to be now. Just after we were hired for this salvage, Sergio here approached me with an offer. I've always been loyal to you, Diamond, but my loyalty to him runs deeper. Sergio's parents were posted to Canis in the Terran Embassy. We grew up together, and he saved me from an angry pack more than once. When his family was reposted, I would have gone with him had there been a way.
Tor explained, then fondly leaned against the human's leg. Diamond held her ground, trying to decide what to do. The rest of the pack watched in silent confusion, and for once, Chico seemed unsure. She felt deeply deceived and betrayed, but in an odd way, understood Tor's sense of loyalty. Out of one ear, Diamond heard Chico's low growl, and knew that she and the troublesome Beta's heart lay in the same place. The empty center of the toroid began to come to life. At first, a small point appeared. Then, as an ancient television would do, it flickered into a field of static that made Diamond's fur stand on end. Tor and his human companion turned to see what was happening. Taking advantage of the distraction, Diamond growled at Chico.
You've got 30 minutes. Get the gear out of here and get it to our buyer. You're the alpha now.
Tor turned away from the device and started to put his mouth on the communicator bit on his collar. But before he could touch it, Diamond launched herself at him and Sergio, knocking all of them backwards into the growing field. There was an audible pop as the buzzing particles collapsed and took Diamond, Tor, and Sergio with them, leaving only the metallic scent of ozone in the air. Diamond opened one heavy eyelid and saw light all around her. Someone was lovingly stroking her behind the ears. The pain seemed so distant now, and she knew everything would be okay. She had done her job well. So Diamond finally stopped fighting and let herself go.
Thanks for listening to Makeshift Story 75, Somewhere, Sometime, Canis Major. We hope that you've enjoyed this month's episode. As always, if you like what we're doing, please tell your friends about us, or write a review on iTunes, Google Plus, or Stitcher Radio. We love hearing your comments, so send us an email to makeshiftstories@gmail.com, or visit our website at makeshiftstories.com. And if you're looking for more great speculative fiction podcasts, but are tired of wading through iTunes only to find dead feeds and disappointing episodes, we'd recommend checking out Synthetic Voices. Each month, podcast critic Jimmy Rogers recommends a few of his favorite episodes from a wide variety of FS podcasts. So head over to scienceismagic.com to discover new, free, engaging stories. To listen to Makeshift Stories on your iOS, Android device, or in your car, please download Stitcher Radio from iTunes or the Google Play Store. This month's story was written and read by Alan B. Hare. The opening and closing theme is Podsafe Music by David Hume. Makeshift Stories is released under a Creative Commons non-commercial attribution, no derivative license, which means that you're free to share our stories. Just remember to credit us and don't alter anything.